Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
After burial, then we can sit down and say, okay, who did this and how did it happen? And then the independent experts should be able to unveil their findings and share to the public.
Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera declares a public holiday to allow citizens to pay their last respect before the burial of the vice president on Monday.
The Electoral Commission of Namibia is currently conducting the fourth registration of voters across the country and at all Namibian foreign embassies.
The Electoral Commission of Namibia begins a nationwide voter registration drive
to address war crimes, crimes against humanity committed in Liberia, two civil wars, needed great international support. But those support could not come without the United States government's support.
And an activist calls on the U.S. and the international community to support Liberia's war and financial crimes court. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Malawi, the board chairperson of the Human Rights Consultative Committee has sharply condemned citizens who are accusing President Lazarus Chakwera of having a hand in the death of Vice President Saulos Chilima. Robert Nkwazalamba has also called for an independent inquiry into the plane crash that led to the death of the vice president and others. His comments come after some leaders of the United Transformation Movement, UTM, and social media influencers accused the president of being behind the plane crash that killed the vice president. President Chakwera has declared Monday a public holiday to allow the public to pay their last respect to the deceased vice president before his burial. For more about the call for the investigation into the plane crash and reaction of Malawians, I reach Robert Nkwazalamba, board chairperson of the Human Rights Consultative Committee.
We are looking at these allegations as being grave, unfounded, divisive, but also we feel they have to be condemned in the strongest terms, simply because the accident happened nearly 5 days ago. No one has a clear clue as regards to what happened. At our level, we have pressed for government to undertake an investigation, which should include our development partner experts, and not just by ourselves, as the MDF has said it is going to do so. So our belief is any independent investigations will help us to understand exactly what happened. And we believe it is at that level that we should be able now to start pointing fingers at who may have neglected their responsibilities or who may have been behind the plot. But as it stands, with him lying in state, we find it unfortunate that other individuals have to start accusing him of being behind the death of the vice president, as it may.
Robert, the vice president is supposed to be buried on Monday. The president has declared a national holiday on Monday to allow for Malawians to pay their last respect. But I understand the family of the deceased vice president is calling for an independent investigation to find out what really transpired. Your thoughts?
Yes, we agree with the family to say we have to find out as a nation what exactly transpired. And this is why we have been supporting cause to say, can we first mourn the vice president and the rest? After burial, then we can sit down and say, okay, who did this and how did it happen? And then the independent experts should be able to unveil their findings and share to the public. We understand that the Malawi Defense Force already carried out its report and it said it was sending the report to the head of state. But at our level, we have said it would be ideal that that report should not be made public for the time being. We would want another independent investigation that now should come up with a report. When that report is out, then we may even ask to find out what the MDF report came up with, because if we start getting the report from MDF, it may influence the outcome of any other investigations that may occur.
How are Malawians reacting to this, especially as these allegations and speculations keep being peddled around?
Yeah, we have an adage that in English, I'm not so sure if I can be perfect to mention it, to say if someone is aggrieved, there is no amount of force or effort that you can make to force them to stop crying. So others cry by way of expressing themselves, hitting themselves on the ground. Others who cry, shedding tears. So those that are speaking, we are saying, yes, they can be allowed to speak, but they need to have a limit, because some of the people who are crying, if they hold key positions in party or religious circles, have the desire or the element of trying to cause chaos in the country or violence, because people will act on their mode of cry. So yes, the party is divided, but the overall goal and message within the party, you have people who are saying, let's mourn our vice president, but you have others who are saying this is an opportunity for us to hit back at government. Because, you know, we have had several other challenges, like the cost of living has been high. People have been disappointed that perhaps what the government promised has not been fulfilled. So others are looking at this as an opportunity as to bring down the government by way of using this death and then forcing things to happen. They are demanding people to resign. They are demanding government to step down. So many things that are happening. But in all fairness, we are saying everyone who has information, first-hand information relating to the crash, so this is the period we are saying, let's accept that things can go haywire. But at the end of the day, we need to remain a united nation and ensure that there is peace, which even the departed vice president would have loved, that there has to be peace. Even in his death, he would love us to still remain united and not disintegrate simply because he's gone.
Robert Nkwe Zalamba is the board chairperson of the Human Rights Consultative Committee. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe.
Do you feel stressed about work, school, or relationship? Well, dancing might be your best bet. It does not only relieve stress, but the physical, mental, and emotional health benefits of movements associated with dance are endless. On this week's edition of Our Voices, we will explore the incredible benefits of dance while discovering some dance techniques. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
The Electoral Commission of Namibia has launched a nationwide voter registration drive. It will document prospective voters ahead of the coming November 27 general election. Divette Mulauli, the spokesperson for the Electoral Commission, says Namibians in the diaspora can register at the country's embassies and missions where they live. This, as some Namibians, including two independent presidential candidates, accused the electoral body of incompetence over the slow registration process and insufficient public information. The Electoral Commission rejects the accusation. For reaction to the criticisms and more on the ongoing voter registration process, I reach Commission spokesperson Divette Mulauli.
The Electoral Commission of Namibia is currently conducting the fourth registration of voters across the country and at all Namibian foreign embassies. What this entails is that all Namibians who are eligible to vote who are 18 years and above are required to re-register as voters. The requirements to register as a voter in Namibia is, number one, you must be a Namibian citizen, you must be 18 years and above, and thirdly, you must be able to identify yourself by providing your proof of citizenship. Now, proof of citizenship can be, number one, can be your Namibian ID, your valid Namibian green passport, your birth certificate, together with a valid driver's license. You can also present your proof of citizenship and two registered deponents.
When does this process end?
It started on the 3rd June and it will end on the 1st of August. And registration is only conducted between Monday and Saturday from 8 to 1900 hours.
How does the Electoral Commission ensure transparency? Do you have opposition parties involved to monitor the process?
In terms of ensuring transparency, the commission has already engaged with all key stakeholders, including political parties, in terms of the processes. But this process for its own, it's mainly and entirely conducted by the commission as an independent body that is mandated to conduct, supervise and direct elections and referenda in Namibia.
Well, the registration has been rather slow, and that prompted independent presidential candidate, including Rosa Namise, to say that this is due to incompetence and insufficient public information. How do you react to that?
Such claims are baseless, because if you look at our registration points, locally we have 4,300 registration points, and we have dispatched over 500 teams. So it's like in a locality or in one constituency, you have more than five registration teams. And of course, during the first 2 days, we have observed challenges here and there, but these were minor challenges. And we must not also confuse the time frame that you spend in the queue compared to the time frame that you spend at the initial registration itself, when you start completing your forms and when your biometrics have been captured. Those two must be differentiated.
How many people is the Electoral Commission targeting?
Of course, we are anticipating to register about 1.7 million voters. The statistics that was released early this year indicates that there are about 1.7 million eligible voters in Namibia. So our target is to ensure that we register that population in its entirety.
What assurances are you giving Namibians during this voter registration process to ensure credibility of the coming elections?
Well, thank you. Maybe before I go to that, let me just quickly update you on the preliminary data of the registered voters in the last 6 days, from the 3rd of June when we commenced to the 8th of June. We have recorded over 187,171 registered voters. Out of this total amount, 441 registered voters living abroad. So it's quite a satisfactory number within 6 days. So we are optimistic that we are going to reach the 1.7 target that we have set ourselves. In terms of the credibility of the registration process, as I've clearly indicated, our system uses biometric data capturing. It's an enhanced system that ensures that it also filters the duplicates from the original ones, so that we can have a credible voters register. And once the process is complete, a provisional voters register will be published, and the public will be given a period to object.
Divert Mulauli is the spokesperson of the Electoral Commission of Namibia. He spoke with me from the Namibian capital, Windhoek. Zambia's President Hakainde Hichilema has appointed former Justice Minister Mulambo Haimbe as the new Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation. The announcement follows a mini-cabinet reshuffle, which saw a gender activist take up the Justice Minister portfolio while Haimbe becomes the country's top diplomat. Haimbe, who is a lawyer and a parliamentarian, was a justice minister while also acting as the foreign minister for the last 5 months. Observers say the president appears to have a lot of confidence in him for simultaneously holding two cabinet positions before the president's decision to move him to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation. I talked to Haimbe via video about how the administration plans to use diplomacy to ensure regional stability, peace and security in the Southern African region. Here is the conclusion of the conversation.
Well, your neighboring country, you mentioned the Democratic Republic of Congo, is having some challenges, security challenges in some parts of the country with the M23 rebel group. Now, knowing the fact that you are just next door neighbors, how is Lusaka trying to get involved in helping your sister country in Kinshasa, the administration in Kinshasa, to resolve one of these major problems that a lot of people have expressed concern about?
I mentioned that the SADC has got a military force in place to stabilize the region, in particular of the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is faced with hostilities. And this is the Eastern DRC. And our role, of course, as a Troika chairperson at the moment, is to ensure that the processes that are undertaken by the SAMI DRC, as we refer to it, which is the SADC force that I mentioned, are up to date, to ensure that the countries that are participating in the peace process that is being driven by SADC do play their parts in terms of contribution of troops, contribution of funding, and so on and so forth. So there's that administrative aspect to it. Of course, not alone, but as current chair, in collaboration with the remaining countries in SADC and the Secretariat. But more importantly, there are a number of initiatives that have been put in place from a diplomatic perspective, which we as Zambia are supporting. I'm talking about the Luanda peace process, for example, which is being led by President Lourenco of Angola. I'm talking about other peace processes that have been put in place. We have the Kenya Initiative out of Nairobi. And these diplomatic processes are aimed at bringing parties to the table to find an ultimate solution to the destabilization that we have seen due to conflict. And this is, again, another crucial role that we as a sister country must play. I'd like to add, Peter, that Zambia has got a border that runs in excess of 1,000 kilometers with the DRC. Therefore, it is in our interest, aside from the fact that we are a sisterly country, it is in our interest to ensure that we do what we can to work with our brothers and sisters in the DRC to resolve some of these challenges. And let's not also forget that Zambia is also host to a good number of persons displaced on account of those hostilities, and therefore directly impacted in respect of these challenges that we face. We have, in fact, not only Zambia, but again, other neighborly countries to the DRC are impacted by this. Also, we have a huge potential humanitarian challenge that we are facing. So it's in all our interest to ensure that we play our part in addressing these challenges.
About five countries in the Southern African region are going to be having elections. South Africa just concluded it. Botswana will be. And then you also have issues of pro-democracy activists calling for dialogue between the government in Eswatini and pro-democracy activists. But how is your government, and in this case, you as the Minister of Foreign Affairs, handling these issues? How does Lusaka want to get engaged in some of these issues to ensure the promotion of democracy, rule of law, and to ensure peace and stability in the region?
The short answer to that is we are part of a larger regional grouping, which is the SADC grouping. In terms of elections, you would have seen that the SADC has had an electoral observer mission in each of the countries that has had elections in the region, most recently South Africa and Madagascar. And the idea there is, as again, the organ Troika, that chairperson that is in charge of appointing the mission head, the idea is to ensure that an appropriate mission head is selected in the first place that is capable of bringing skills into the theater, if I may use that expression, that will foster, without, of course, impinging on the sovereignty of any of these countries, but that will foster those ideals which are SADC-wide in any event. And so that is the role that we play. And, of course, also from the perspective of continual engagement with our neighbors, we are able to exchange these important views and ideas with regard to the rule of law and democracy. I can say certainly that in all our neighboring countries, there is without question a lot of work that is put in place to embed tenets of democracy, tenets of the rule of law, which we all as a region believe in, of course, keeping in mind the fact that we'll have our own nuances as sovereign states.
Mulambo Haimbe is the Zambian Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. Still in Zambia, a prominent Socialist Party parliamentarian says decisions by the police to stop their rallies are unconstitutional and an affront to democracy. Olivia Piri is a member of the National Management Council and the chairperson of the National Resources Mobilization of the Socialist Party. She says state institutions, including the police, should not be used to undermine the country's burgeoning democracy. Her remarks came after the police cancelled the party's planned rally recently in Kitwe. This after the police expressed concern about security. The rally, the opposition party said, was aimed at highlighting key issues, including the high prices of commodities, political intimidation and violence. Olivia Piri tells me the ongoing refusal of the police to allow opposition rallies undermines democracy and the rule of law.
First and foremost, there's no law in Zambia which says you're supposed to get permission. What you're supposed to do is notify the police that will be having the rally so that they provide security if they need be. And for SP, this is not the first rally that we've been stopped. We would notify them, and then they'll cancel for no reason. This one, we wrote to them to tell them we'll be having a rally through our Copper Belt office. They wrote and followed all the procedure that themselves have put, which is actually against the law. And one of another dramatic event, because there were rumors that Edgar Chagwalungu is going to be guest speaker on that rally. So we were not even given the reason why that has been cancelled.
But you know, Miss Piri, the police have recently come out with concerns about the state of security. One of the police officers was quoted as saying they are concerned that rival political party supporters could attack you.
It doesn't make sense, comrade, because how can a rally be a danger to security, and who are they preventing? It doesn't make sense. It's just an excuse, because there's no law that that says that. It's themselves they are making. I'll tell you right now, there have been issues. I think the UPND cadres, the past 2 weeks, there was a riot actually in Baulen, in Lusaka Central Constituency, in an area called Baulen. It was the UPND youth who were misbehaving. When former head of state, President Edgar Chagwalungu, was called to appear at ACC, they went there, the UPND youths, in the full view of the police, misbehaving and insulting. So which danger? Who is endangering who?
But Miss Piri, if you said that this youth from the UPND are misbehaving, don't you think the police then would have a concern to ensure there's no violence? And so it stops the activity to ensure there is peace.
The police have never swung to go and maintain order where the UPND are misbehaving. And it's only when the opposition with the peaceful, because one thing I'll tell you, in the history of this country, when Zambia got its independence, even under UNIP, which was a one-party state, people were allowed to demonstrate, peaceful demonstration. There were all those demonstrations that were happening. And even this stopping of a riot, it's not even the police, it's the instructions. Because even what happened in Kitwe, we asked them that we have this authority which we authorized. What is the reason? They didn't have a reason. They were saying that's a directive they've gotten from whoever. I'm sure it's from the above.
Some opposition political parties are threatening to take the police to court for not allowing them to hold rallies. Is this the stance of the Socialist Party? Are you taking the police to court too?
The sad part, comrade, is from the court, from the police to the court, it's the same system. They are not operating independently and in accordance with the law. So even if we go to court, it will be an exercise, academic exercise. I'll give you another good example, the drama that is happening in the country. The abduction of JJ Banda is so shocking. JJ Banda was abducted and is found. What we're expecting in the normal state government was the government to investigate the abduction. What have they done? They've shelved abduction and brought in cases that happened 7 years ago in order to silence the person who was abducted. We want to see as Zambians how the law is going to be applied on those people that have been mentioned by JJ as the people that abducted him.
Olivia Piri is a parliamentarian from the opposition Socialist Party. She spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In Liberia, the National Secretary of the Civil Society Human Rights Advocacy Platform is calling on the U.S. and the international community to support the country's soon-to-be-established War and Financial Crimes Court. Adama Kiatamba Dempster also called for legal advisors and financial support for the court. His call came during a hearing on Capitol Hill on accountability for war and economic crimes in Liberia. It comes after President Joseph Boakai signed an executive order to establish the Office of a War and Economic Crimes Court. Observers say the move paves the way towards redressing the wounds of Liberia's civil wars. For more on this call, I reach Adama Kiatamba Dempster.
The fact that Liberia have moved towards addressing accountability to address civil war era crimes or atrocities that were committed during the Liberian Civil War is an important decision. And we thought that to address war crimes, crimes against humanity committed in Liberia two civil wars, needed great international support. But those support could not come without the United States government's support to Liberia because of the historical tie between the U.S. government and the Liberian government. So on the basis of that, we have been pursuing a process that will bring justice to bring a closure to the long civil war that was fought in Liberia. And we thought that we would talk to the U.S. Congress, State Department to support the president's vision, because President Joseph Boakai had signed the executive order creating the office for the war crimes that will facilitate the creation of the war crimes court.
Why is it so important to the people of Liberia for this war and economic crimes court to be established?
It's important because it will be able to address the root cause of the conflict and, of course, address the atrocities that were committed during the Civil War, where hundreds of people were made victims. And of course, beyond that, those who are listed for having committed the atrocities are the people who are the most powerful people in the country, most of them serving in top position in government. And there had not been any form of reparation or support for victims and victims' community in terms of bringing closure to the long atrocities that were committed during the Civil War. But more besides, we want the rule of law, the rule of law that will help Liberia for the country to move forward in addressing accountability and bringing justice for all.
Adama, so in your presentation to the U.S. House of Representatives Committee, you called on the international community, especially the U.S., to provide legal advices and to help Liberia organize a donor conference to support the court. Why is this necessary?
It's necessary because we are a developing country. Liberia is a developing country that relies on donor support to be able to roll out its development agenda. So in the context of dealing and implementing the Truth and Reconciliation Commission recommendation, it will require international donor support to roll out all of the implementation recommendations that are laid out in the TRC report. So the donor conference, basically, we are not the first country. This has happened to other countries. We have history of the U.S. government helping even Sierra Leone, that other countries like the Central African Republic, other countries that have pursued the issue of accountability. The U.S. have been a great help to this country. So with our historical tie to the U.S., we're saying that this would just not be that you take donors' money and just put it into the coffers of Liberia, but let it be a process that Liberian and U.S. will be able to work together to raise the donor funding that will help to support Liberia in addressing the root cause of the conflict, bringing total closure to the long civil war that Liberia fought.
Calling for international expertise assistance to help with this court, How crucial is it? Because you are also advocating that the court should be led by Liberian because that is where the crimes were committed. Talk to me briefly about it.
Yeah. So the aspect of legal advisor, it will help us because we don't have a history of creating such a court before. Liberia have never created a war crimes court. We fought a war and we've gone years but we have not prosecuted anyone under international law, international humanitarian law. So as a result of this, from our own legal jurisprudence, we need international lawyer to help Liberia to lay out the legal advice on how we're going to proceed, because this is the first. And of course, to do that, we will have to have our Liberian lawyers and international lawyers, including regional, working hand in hand to roll this out. My goal to understand that, like you see, Sierra Leone, that is next door, the issue of war crime tribunal, it do recommend for both international and local legal experts to work together in making sure that this happen and happen in the context of fairness, in the context of having impartial trials, so that there will be no bias when it comes to prosecuting war crimes and crimes against humanity.
Adama Kiatamba Dempster is the National Secretary of the Civil Society Human Rights Advocacy Platform. He spoke with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. In Rwanda, Diane Rwigara, a disqualified presidential candidate, says she has yet to decide whether to challenge the Electoral Commission's decision in court to prevent her from participating in next month's presidential election. Government critic Rwigara says she will not stop active politics despite the decision to bar her from competing in the polls. Citing the failure to meet signature requirements, the Electoral Commission disqualified Rwigara from contesting. Those qualified to run include independent candidate Philippe Mpayimana, the Democratic Green Party candidate Frank Habineza, and incumbent President Paul Kagame. Diane Rwigara, the leader of the People's Salvation Movement, or PSM, tells me that she is not giving up despite the disqualification setback.
I was very disappointed and sad to hear that I'm not on the list of presidential candidates. After putting so much work and effort into the process, I was not happy at all about not being selected.
Did the Electoral Commission explain the reason behind your disqualification?
Well, they said that the signatures I provided were not authentic. They gave the same reason as last election in 2017, except that last election we had the right to go back and recollect new signatures, but this time we don't have that right.
But Diane, some people are suggesting that if in 2017 a similar problem arose, why were you not careful enough in order to submit credible or authentic signatures that will enable you to qualify to contest as a presidential candidate, like you said?
I did collect authentic signatures, like in 2017, but since they did not want me to be on the list of candidates, they had to find a reason to disqualify me. So I was very careful. I provided everything that was required, but they simply did not want me. They do not want me to campaign.
But some people are suggesting that perhaps you should seek legal redress in court. You should sue them in court to challenge the decision. Is that a path you want to take?
I don't think so.
Why? Why don't you think so?
Because I don't believe we have the kind of judiciary system that is independent. I'm not saying that they can never be independent. They have been at times, but in this case, I doubt they could rule in my favor, even if I'm right.
So what is your message to your people who signed for you?
I would tell them to not be disappointed, because it's not over. Yes, we were hoping to participate in this election. And yes, I understand that it is disappointing. But it's not over. We will continue to participate in the politics of our country. So in the near future, I will let them know what's next.
Diane Rigara is the leader of the People's Salvation Movement, or PSM. She spoke with me from the Rwandan capital, Kigali. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. The people of Africa should send a hearty congratulations to President Ramaphosa for his re-election by the 7th Parliament of South Africa in Cape Town. He really deserves it. Whatever questions anyone may have had about the leadership of President Ramaphosa should be set aside, because since he hosted the BRICS summit, which managed the expansion of BRICS, his performance has been stellar. But his detractors, mainly outside of South Africa, wish to punish him from taking Israel to the ICJ on the accusation of genocide. So it was an uphill fight. And luckily, even though the ANC could not rule by its own as in the past, it managed to stand tall and manage the process of forming a national unity government. Of course, he was constrained considerably when his two natural political ideological partners could have made it an easy process and a more safe and strong coalition. But the problem was and remains that the MK party, the party that gained most in the election, said they would not sit in any government where the Democratic Alliance is also part of the government. Earlier, the party MK has said they would not participate in any government by President Ramaphosa. Julius Manila's party also said they would not sit in any government with the DA. So these two decisions, which may be unwise in my view, restricted the choice open to the ANC. So now we have a four-party national unity government. Although I must say, the Western press continues to say it is not unity government, but is a kind of unity government between the ANC and the Democratic Alliance. This is deliberate because what they want to indicate is that a government with the ANC, which is led by a party who is favorable to the market, is preferable. And as everyone knows, the DA is a pro-party, market party. And there is also the fact that many of those who are beholding to the market honestly believe that South Africa could only prosper if it has a government that is likable by the market. As a former finance and development minister, I can tell you the hype of the market is just that. Surely the market can produce a robust market news. The market can become prosperous and there will be many, many investors in the stock markets. But we know in this situation, only a tiny minority will benefit, maybe not more than 5% of the population. The rest are lost out. The reason being, and Africans should know this,
this because the stock market is capital intensive. Some would say that it is possible to have the wealth trickle down. But trickle down economy does not work. What countries like South Africa and North Africa need is a labor intensive economy, which could tackle the problem of unemployment, paying good salaries that can raise the level of the middle class and stabilize the society. But there is no way the DEA would cooperate in creating such an economy in South Africa. So we have what we have. We have the DA and we have two wings of the Inkatha Party. Africans must also know that the Inkatha Party was formed by the late Chief Buthelezi. And in the last year of the apartheid regime, the Inkatha Party was in partnership with the apartheid party. So it is understandable that the offshoot of the Inkatha Party will find no difficulty being in government with the Democratic Alliance. The question is whether or not this will be a stable government. We need to wait until we see the reports promised by the Secretary General of ANC, which says any form of transparency will tell the South African people the deals that were made. Secondly, we have to wait until we see the list of ministerial posts and the portfolios for us to make a sound judgment. But against the euphoria which has been trumpeted because of the possibility that the market will favor this national unity government, we must put the harsh reality that awaits the 7th Parliament. Because if and when MK decides to end his boycotts and return to Parliament, that party, together with Malema's economic fighter party, could form the most ferocious opposition ever seen in the South African Parliament. They possess the skill to know all the ropes of the national government, and they will be wide awake to see there is no slippage where the DA would acquire more power in the Parliament. So one would say we are going to see rough riding in the next few days and weeks for this national unity government. And when the dust settles, we can reassess the prospect of such a government for South Africa. I thank you.
That was Woman's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Please, touch your knees if you please. everybody. I want you to clap your hands for me. Ready? Here we go. Here we go. Clap your hands. Clap your hands. Clap your hands. Clap your hands. Stamp your feet. Stamp your feet. Stamp your feet. Stamp your feet. Left hand swinging if you please.
I'm more shackle shack.
Right hand swinging if you please.
I'm more shackle shack.
Left hand swinging if you please.
I'm more shackle shack.
Right hand swinging if you please.
I'm more shackle shack.
Belly to belly if you please.
I'm more shackle shack.
Belly to belly.
Thank you.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer Justin Thwaite, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, a man who hangs around a beautiful girl without saying a word ends up fetching water for guests at her wedding. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.